everybody. Good afternoon to colleagues in Asia. My name is Karuna Pal, and I'm the head of the Programming, Partnerships, and Knowledge Sharing Unit of the Social Protection Department. I wish to welcome you on behalf of the Social Protection Department to this preparatory meeting for participants from Asia and the Arab states, who will be attending the ILO's tripartite roundtable on pension trends and reforms. So just to let you know, we are holding these meetings separately for the various regions, given the time zone constraints. So during this particular meeting, there will be simultaneous interpretation provided in English, Chinese, and Arabic. So please choose your preferred language in the interpretation icon that you see at the bottom of your screen. So I repeat, it's Arabic, Chinese, and English. So let me first take you through the objective of this meeting and the agenda. So the objective of the meeting is to provide participants to the roundtable with the following: an overview of the purpose of the roundtable and its agenda. For those who are listening in Arabic, are you able to hear the Arabic channel? Because so can we? The Arabic channel is not working. Have you checked on the bottom to choose the interpretation icon?
Yes, the icon is showing only English and Chinese.
Well, here I see English, Chinese, and Arabic.
No.
Can you choose the English channel and see if maybe the English channel is...
Sorry, on my screen I see as well the translation English, Chinese, and Arabic.
Sorry, on my screen I only see English, Chinese.
Maybe try the English channel, then see if the English channel they're having it in Arabic.
I did that choice. It's only in English. There's no Arabic translation.
You don't have the Arabic translation, so
no.
We are hearing it here, so maybe there is a connection that you have to check on your computer. Because we are hearing the Arabic translation here. Have you tried to see if to reconnect maybe to the Zoom?
I will try to reconnect. I will leave the meeting. I will enter it. I will see.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, I'm sorry. We're just trying to check if we can help for the external participants, but here we do hear the Arabic channel. So maybe it's a question of reconnecting into the Zoom. Okay.
The same.
It's the same? Okay, we are just checking to make sure that we can get you the Arabic icon, but we see it here. So it's possibly that outside we are unable to see it. Would you mind if I continue, or I can continue? Okay, and we are going to check to make sure that we get the Arabic translation for you, the icon for you. So the objective of the preparatory meeting is to provide participants to the roundtable with an overview of the purpose of the roundtable and its agenda, to provide you with an overview of the rationale and the structure of the questionnaire, and to go through the different principles that are mentioned in the questionnaire, and then to provide you with any clarifications that you may wish to have regarding the questionnaire and the roundtable. On the agenda, we have today four items. Firstly, there will be an introduction presented by the Director of the Social Protection Department, Shara Razavi. It will be followed by an overview on the purpose of the roundtable presented by the Deputy Director of the Social Protection Department, Valerie Schmidt. And following that, there will be a presentation on the structure and the rationale of the questionnaire by the Social Protection Policy Specialist of the Department, Mr. Krum Markov, and the Social Protection Legal and Standards Officer, Maya Sternplatzer. And then we will open the floor for any questions and comments that you may have. And in order that I can give you also the floor, if you wish to take the floor or ask questions or provide any comments, I would please ask you to raise your hand with the little icon that you have available in your chat box, or to indicate in the chat box that you wish to take the floor. So in order to enable us to have as effective a meeting as possible, could I kindly also request you to keep your mics muted until you take the floor, and to please raise the hand in the chat box if you wish to take the floor. And also, when you take the floor, we would like to see you, so please do put on your camera so that we visually can see you. Now, before we move to the different presentations, I would like to ask if we could do a round of table so that you can please, so that we can all please introduce ourselves. So, may I start then with our representatives from China, please, and then we will go to Indonesia and then Jordan. So, China, please. I know they are representatives. Over to you. Madam Peng, are you connected? I see that you're connected. So would you like to take the floor? Maybe you're still muted. Please do present yourself.
Yes, I'm here.
Please do present yourself.
I'm Anne Peng Guo from China University of Labor Relations, and of China Federation of Trade Unions, representing the Labor Union of China, to participate this meeting for the workers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other representatives from China? The floor is to you. Okay. We can go to Indonesia then, please. So, Mr.
Yes. Thank you. Good afternoon from Indonesia and good morning for you. Are you listening for me?
Yes.
You can hear
please,
me?
Please go ahead. Yes.
My name is Rexon Silaban. I used to be a governing body in the ILO for 9 years. I am the president of the former president of KSBSI, one of the major trade unions in Indonesia. Now I am working for Indonesia Social Security Employment, representing workers. But in the union now, I'm the National Advisor for Trade Union, KSBSI. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other representatives from Indonesia?
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
My name is... Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Yeah. My name is Mia. I'm from Ministry of Manpower of Indonesia. For now, I'm not represent from the government side for the delegation of tripartite meet this roundtable meeting. But For now, I just for take note for something important that I used to I explain to our delegation later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, should we move to Jordan then, please?
Okay.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Sorry. I am Dr. Randa Khalidi. I am presenting the General Federation of Trade Unions of Workers in Jordan. I am a vice president of Women's Committee in General Federation of Trade Unions in Jordan. Also, I am a member of the administrative board of General Trade Union of Workers in Health Services and Pharmaceutical Industries. Also, I am a chairperson of Women Committee in my trade union.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I am Mohammed Oude from Jordan also. I am from Social Security Corporation of Jordan, represent SSC. I'm working as Deputy General Director for Administrative and Financial Affairs. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ahmed. I'm working at the Social Security of Jordan. It's been a pleasure to be here with you all in such great meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, then maybe we go to our colleagues from the ITUC and IOE.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Evelyn Astor. I'm an advisor on economic and social policy at the ITUC, and I'm very happy to be assisting the workers' representatives in this meeting.
Thank you, Evelyn. Okay, can we move to our colleagues in the, our ILO colleagues in the field? So, China, please. Luis? Can we move to our colleagues in the field? I see Luca, please, could you present yourself? And Luis, you're also connected.
Yes, good morning. My name is Luca Pellerano. I'm a senior social protection specialist for the Arab States region, based in Beirut and working very closely with our constituents in Jordan who participate in the meeting today.
Thank you. Luis?
Good day. I'm Chief Technical Advisor at the ILO office in Beijing, in charge of a program for China, funded by the European Union. Just to say that I think there is a government representative in the call, Ms. Wang. If you want to take the floor, just to introduce yourself, Ms. Wang.
Thank you, Luis. Please, Ms. Wong, would you like to take the floor to introduce yourself?
No. Sorry. All right. Please. Yeah. Can you see me?
Yes, we can see you and we can hear you. Thank you. Yes, please.
Hello, everyone. I'm Wang Xiaochen from the MOS, Ministry of Human Resources and Social Security. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. We have Zi Yu who's there also. Please do present yourself.
Hi, colleagues. My name is Zhou Jie. I'm a national project coordinator based in Beijing. I'm working together with Luis.
Thank you. And
thank
you. Mustafa, please.
Yes, good morning. My name is Mustafa Saeed. I am the senior worker specialist for the Arab States based in Beirut. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other colleagues from the field who are connected? Please do present yourself. Marcus, are you connected? Marcus, yes.
Yes, hello. My name is Marcus Ruck. I'm the social protection specialist of the ILO office in Bangkok. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, please.
Hello, colleagues. My name is Chris. I'm National Project Coordinator for the ILO FR project in Indonesia, working on social protection, supporting the government in developing the unemployment insurance. We have government and workers' representative from Indonesia, but not employers' representative. Thank you.
Thank you. So could we hear the government representative from Indonesia, please? Okay. So then sorry? Okay. So maybe then Alejandro, and then we go to the colleagues here in Geneva with Ursula, Shara, Valérie, Maya, thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Alejandro Bonilla, former ILO official and external collaborator for this activity, based in Geneva. Thank you very much.
Ursula, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Karuna. Good morning to everyone. My name is Ursula Kuhlke. I'm the senior social protection specialist in ILO's ACTRAF department in Geneva, and I'm very happy to help our constituents together with my ACTRAF colleague and ITUC in this meeting. And we are here to answer your any questions and to accompany you also on the way towards the roundtable. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Shara?
Yeah, colleagues, good morning. My name is Shara Razavi. I'm the director of the Social Protection Department at the ILO, and a real pleasure to see all of you on the screen and look forward to this hopefully helpful preparatory session before the actual pension roundtable. Over to my colleague Valérie now.
Good morning, good afternoon, colleagues. This is Valérie Schmidt, and I'm the deputy director of the Social Protection Department based in Geneva. And previously I was based in Asia, so I'm really happy to be with you today. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone in Geneva, and good afternoon to those of you in other parts of the world. My name is Krum Markov, Social Protection Policy Specialist in the Social Protection Department in ILO HQ Geneva.
Good morning, everybody, and good afternoon to our colleagues in Asia. My name is Maya Stern-Plaza. I'm the Social Protection Legal and Standards Officer at the Social Protection Department here in Geneva.
André?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. My name is André Picard. I'm the head of the Actuarial Services Department in the Social Protection Department, Actuarial Service Unit in the Social Protection Department at the ILO in Geneva, working in a lot on actual evaluation of pension schemes in all the regions, and also on parametric reform and systemic reforms of pension system. Over to you. I think it's Karuna now.
Thank you, André. And I do see somebody marked with Social Security Division. Would you like to present yourself, please?
Good morning, all. I'm Andy, Head Division of Social Security, Ministry of Manpower. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if there is anybody that I have forgotten, please do take the floor.
Yes, thank you. I am Nizam Qahoush, the Regional Desk Officer for Arab States at the headquarters in Geneva. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anybody else whom I have not, who has not presented themselves? No? Okay. So then maybe we go forward, and I give the floor now to Shara Razavi, Director of the Social Protection Department, who will present to you a first introduction on the Pensions Roundtable. Thank you. Over to you, Shara.
Okay, thank you so much, Karuna. And as I said, lovely to be in this meeting with all of you. I'm going to just say a few words by way of background about the whole issue of why we're having this roundtable and the significance of the issue of pensions and income security. And then I'm just going to very briefly show on a slide the agenda for the actual roundtable and the way in which we've had to change the agenda because of the fact that we could only meet virtually and not in person. And I'm sure you will have some questions about the format of the meeting and some of the requirements. So I hope there will be time for you to ask those questions in our meeting today. So something I just want to underline is that, you know, as you probably know from the very foundation of the ILO more than 100 years ago in 1919, the ILO has been playing a leading role in the global development of social security systems, including very importantly pension systems as part of that. Now, what does that mean? Over these years, thanks to its tripartite structure, the ILO has developed, very importantly, a set of normative principles. And these are principles that have been agreed upon by governments, by employers and workers' representatives, through this tripartite structure. And these normative principles have been embedded within the international conventions and recommendations that cover all the different areas of social security, but of particular interest to us today are the ones that specifically pertain to pension systems. So we will be hearing our colleagues, my colleague Kroom, who will be presenting later, referring very much to Convention 102 and Convention 128, as well as Recommendation 202. Now, these standards do form a very solid foundation for the principles that we will be discussing today, which have been the ones around which we have structured the questionnaire that you've been asked to complete. Principles that are very clearly articulated in these standards and that ideally all pension systems should be trying to achieve. Now, in tandem with its normative work, you know, the development of conventions, recommendations, and so forth, the ILO has also done over the many years of its existence, it has played a very useful role in developing quantitative, actuarial, financial, and economic instruments to really help countries assess their pension systems, along with something else that the organization has been doing, which is to provide technical advisory services, as well as producing policy documents, all of which can sort of guide and support country efforts to build pension systems and to undertake the regular kind of parametric reforms and sometimes systemic reforms that are needed to make them respond to the changing realities on the ground. Now, I think we can all agree that pension systems, regardless of the form they take, and they do take very different forms, and we will be talking about that, but regardless of those diversities, they should really be guided at their very core by the objective of providing income security to women and men during their old age as a very important component of the right to social security. Now, having said this, I think even a cursory look at these core principles and minimum benchmarks, which are enshrined in the ILO standards, will show you that the aim has always been to ensure that pension systems meet not just a single objective, but actually that they meet multiple objectives simultaneously by balancing the social needs and rights with financial and fiscal requirements. And also by making sure that this complex balancing act is done through a very well-informed process of social dialogue, so that there is consensus around the way in which these different objectives are being kind of met. Now, having said this, I don't think it's a secret to any of you that this balancing act is quite a complex undertaking. And achieving these multiple objectives from, for example, extending coverage to those who are not already covered, to very importantly, ensuring that the amount, the quantity, the level of benefits is adequate to really enable a life that is not one of poverty, but one that is lived in dignity, to securing financial sustainability of the pension system, while at the same time making sure that the public has trust in the system. You know, all of these different objectives, which are principal, guide us to bring about, have to be balanced. And this is clearly something that's quite complex. Sometimes there can be trade-offs, but there are also synergies. And my colleagues will be talking about that a bit more, and Valérie will elaborate on that a bit more. And I think it's also important to say that, you know, this complex balancing act is often made even more difficult given the kind of transformations that the world is going through. And all of the countries here that we will be, you know, that you are coming from, as well as, you know, other countries in other regions, are in one way or another encountering some of these challenges. Most notably, I think, all of the countries around the world, regardless of their level of development, are grappling with the ongoing transformations in the world of work, and in particular, with the growing informality and precariousness of work, of employment. And whether we call this the emergence of non-standard work or informal work, the reality is that the growth of this type of work, which has some serious implications for particularly contributory pension systems. And this is something that countries are really grappling with. Also, there are huge implications that are coming from demographic shifts, in particular, obviously, population aging, which poses some issues which countries need to grapple with, as well as, you know, in all countries, we're also seeing changing aspirations, rising aspirations, for groups who may have been marginalized and stigmatized, but are now clamoring for equality and want to enjoy the right to income security, including income security in old age. Women in particular, who are not happy with having to depend on the pension of a breadwinner, who want to have their own dignity and independence, including financial independence in old age. So these are also issues that really need pension systems to be responsive to. For example, we know that pension systems that make no provision for those who have very interrupted careers and short employment sort of contributory histories, because they have to go in and out of the labor market for care-related reasons, systems that make no provision for that, in a kind of individualized account systems that have no provision or care credits to take care of those kind of situations, will end up discriminating against those who take on this kind of unpaid work, in particular women. Or systems that are based on gender-specific actuarial tables also will be discriminatory in their outcomes. So these are also all of these issues that pension systems need to be sort of responding to. And on top of all these ongoing changes that pensions need to adapt to, countries are also confronted, unfortunately, too frequently with systemic shocks. And this is one thing which I think is very present to all of us today, as we are still, unfortunately, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has raised new challenges for the sustainability of social security systems, including pension systems. And I'm sure that you will be reflecting on some of these challenges in the questionnaires that you will be completing. Now, given all these challenges, I think the timing of this tripartite pension roundtable could not have been better. So despite all the constraints that we're operating under, I think it's also a moment in time that it is really helpful to be having the meeting and to be focusing on the pension systems and the reforms and changes that they are undergoing. So I think the aim of the roundtable is really to engage among peers in an open discussion on diverse pension systems. We understand each system has its own specific trajectory, its own legal tradition, and is responding to challenges that are very context specific and unique in many ways. But there are also lessons to be learned, because despite the uniqueness, there are also some common challenges and ways in which lessons can be learned from different experiences. And this is what we hope that we are able to do through this pension roundtable, to really enable a process of peer learning. Now, a few words then to end with on the structure of the actual roundtable that we're going to have. And Karuna will be showing the PowerPoint slide, which you would have also received among the lots of material that you received. You would have also received the agenda of this meeting. Now, as you know, the meeting was supposed to take place in person over 3 full days with 8 hours of meetings per day. Now, that is obviously not possible anymore. We have to have the meeting virtually. And given the fact that this roundtable will bring together people from all world regions, the issue of time zone poses difficulties. And to make it possible for everyone to be sort of sitting around a virtual table at the same time, the time that we could find to make that possible is very limited. It's only 2 hours per day. So this poses constraints in terms of how much time all of you are going to have for your presentations. The meeting will take place over 4 days, from the 30th of November through to 4th of December. But Thursday, 3rd of December, there won't be any meetings, neither plenary nor group meetings. And we're hoping that some of the groups will use this time to reflect on and prepare their takeaway messages that they will then be presenting on the last day of the meeting on the 4th of December, where there will be time for those presentations. So therefore, you know, in summary, I should say the time for presentations has been significantly reduced. Governments will only have 5 minutes each to present the highlights of the issues that are brought out in their questionnaires. And workers and employers representatives will only have 3 minutes each, which means that for every country with 5 minutes for government and 2-3 minutes for the social partners, there's going to be a total of 11-minute presentation per country, followed by a very short 4 to 5 minutes of reactions from the plenary, from the floor. Now, we realize this is not satisfactory, and we can, in the discussion, we can talk about it. But realizing that this really reduces the time for presentations, one thing we thought we can do to do justice to the work that you will be doing in completing the questionnaires, and I know that some of you have already completed the questionnaires, what we're suggesting is that in addition to the questionnaires, each participant, i.e. for each country, the 3 groups, governments and the 2 social partners, each prepare a 2-page summary that really synthesizes the highlights that they would like to raise, which is coming out from their questionnaires in terms of how far the pension system and the planned reforms are meeting the ILO principles, to really highlight the key findings in these 2 pages. And we have set a deadline of 23rd of November for these 2 pages. And if you kindly send us the 2 pages by 23rd of November, we will make sure to have it translated into 3 languages and then shared with everyone. So this is one way that we thought we could at least try and complement the fact that you will only have a very short time to present your key findings, to at least have 2 pages that summarize those findings. So then, let me just finish by saying that, you know, today's meeting is really to provide you with the background information that you will need about the core ILO principles that have been used to structure the questionnaire that you've been asked to complete, to answer any questions that you may have about the questionnaire or about the format of the virtual roundtable, any suggestions you may have, any thoughts you may have on this. So it is essentially an information session today to facilitate the preparations for the roundtable and to make sure that you will all be able to get the most out of the roundtable despite this very abbreviated format that we have to live with, unfortunately, given the circumstances. So let me stop here and I'll pass the microphone to my colleague Valerie Schmidt for her explanation of the rationale of the roundtable. Valerie, over to you.
Thank you, Shara. So as Shara suggested, I will present the 4 main objectives of this tripartite roundtable on pension trends and reforms. So today, 68% of people above retirement age receive a pension, either contributory or non-contributory. Old age pensions are the most widespread form of social protection. We have seen significant development of old age pensions coverage over the last few years, where many countries have established universal non-contributory tax-financed social pensions. This includes, for instance, Argentina, Cabo Verde, Chile, China, Lesotho, Mongolia, South Africa, Thailand, or Uzbekistan, to name only a few. So the first objective of this roundtable is to take stock of recent developments in the extension of pension coverage and adequacy of benefits in line with the 2030 agenda, and also to look at remaining coverage gaps and adequacy issues and how countries are overcoming these challenges. Today, 192 countries have established old-age pension systems. Out of these 192 countries, the vast majority, 186 countries, provide pensions in the form of a periodic cash benefit. And only a small minority, 6 countries, provide only lump sum benefits through provident funds or similar programs. Out of these 192 countries, 102 have organized their pension systems through a mix of contributory and non-contributory schemes. The non-contributory component allows these countries, like Vietnam, for instance, to expand coverage to those who did not have a chance to contribute to their pensions during their working age. What international experience shows is that pension systems can be organized in many different ways, and that there is no one-size-fits-all approach. So the second objective of this tripartite roundtable is to have an open discussion on pensions, looking at a variety of country models and situations, and reflecting ongoing national policy discussions and reforms. This roundtable discussion will benefit from a large body of experience from around the world. And this is why we have tried, in consultation with IOE and ITUC, to invite a diversity of countries from all regions and with various forms of organization of their pension systems. As Shara explained, this discussion is both relevant and timely. The roundtable is relevant in the context of the achievement of SDG 1 on ending poverty. Despite global progress in the extension of coverage, the adequacy of old-age pension benefits remains a major challenge in many countries. In a large majority of countries, the old-age non-contributory pensions represent less than 40% of national poverty lines. In this regard, indexation of pensions, or at least periodic reviews, are key, and my colleague Krum Markov will explain a little bit better this point. This roundtable is also relevant in the context of the achievement of SDG 10 on reducing inequalities. In particular, gender equality considerations are gaining some ground in the public debate on pensions. Countries are progressively eliminating discriminatory elements of their pension schemes, such as the differential pension ages between men and women, which were common until recently. But this discussion is timely, as Shara explained, in the context of demographic changes, as people, of course, live longer, and the transformation of the world of work. And last but not least, this discussion is extremely timely in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. That has been a wake-up call, reminding us of the importance of social security in providing income security for all, including pensions for persons in old age. However, we may soon face a new period of austerity, leading to adjustment measures that may affect the adequacy and sustainability of pension systems. So the third objective of this roundtable is to understand to what extent pension systems and policies have been affected and also can proactively contribute to facilitating current transformations of our economies and societies while pursuing our common ambition of social justice. From an ILO perspective, all pension schemes that contribute towards old age income security are relevant. However, their degree of relevance is measured by their compliance with international standards on social security. As Shara explained already, since its foundation in 1919, the International Labour Organization has developed a set of normative instruments, conventions, and recommendations covering all areas of social security, including pension systems. These international social security standards are agreed collectively by governments, employers, and workers, as you all know, and constitute a guide for policy design and implementation of pension systems. Relevant standards in the area of old-age pensions include ILO Convention 102, ILO Convention 128, and ILO Recommendation 202. These standards are meant to be applicable worldwide and establish core guiding principles and minimum benchmarks that need to be achieved by the various types of schemes existing at national level. So minimum benchmarks relate to, for instance, the persons to be protected, the type, level, and duration of benefits, the entitlement conditions, qualifying periods, etc. Guiding principles relate to the organization, financing, management of old-age pension systems. We have listed the main 9 guiding principles in the concept note on page 5, if you want to go back to the concept note. The questionnaire that we have asked you to complete prior to the roundtable is based on these guiding principles and minimum benchmarks. It allows you to describe your national pension system through the lens of ILO principles and standards, and to assess and discuss to what extent your national pension system complies with these principles and standards. In some cases, your pension system may excel in some dimensions. For instance, it may have achieved universal coverage, which is related to principle 1, but may not have achieved adequacy of benefits, which is another equally important principle, principle number 3. Your pension system may have achieved financial, fiscal, and economic sustainability, which is principle 6, but this may not rely on social solidarity and collective financing, principle 2, or vice versa. So the idea is to optimize this package of principles and benchmarks. It is not to focus on 1 or 2 principles only, but to reach a balance, as Shara explained, by trying to make all principles and all objectives a reality. So the 4th and last objective of our pension roundtable is to go back to ILO's principles and standards as a common denominator or a common lens through which each country can assess its pension system, discuss policy options and reforms, and through national dialogue, improve current and future situation. According to the ILO Centenary Declaration for the Future of Work, social protection should be universal, comprehensive, adequate, sustainable, and adapted to the developments in the world of work. These are 5 adjectives and are also 5 objectives. So the international social security standards can help us achieve these. So let's make good use of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Valérie. So now can we move on to Krum? Krum, would you? I'll put up the presentation. So over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Karuna. And thank you, Shah and Valérie, for your very, very comprehensive introductions. I will probably, before we get into the specificity of the principles relevant from the point of view of pensions. I wish to make a short introduction very quickly, because many of these elements that I wanted to touch upon have already been touched by Shara and Valerie. In their... So I will make three main points about the long history shared by the ILO and the development of pension systems across the world. The first point is that ILO's comparative advantage, in a way, is its constitutional mandate. The organization has started working on pensions already based on the mandate given to it by governments, employers, and workers from around the world in 1919, the year of its establishment. This work has given has resulted in a comprehensive body of standards being developed along across the years. Now, of course, we know that many other players have, both international and regional, have started to work on pensions. But from the point of view of the constitutional mandate, the ILO constitution is unique in that it gives the organization a specific mandate to work and develop a normative framework, as Shara and Valerie mentioned, in this respect. So by developing and working on these this set of standards and working on helping countries to implement pension schemes along all these years, the ILO has developed a considerable experience and expertise in this area. Now, the second point I wanted to make about pensions and ILO is the advantage of tripartism. As Valerie and Shara also mentioned, the ILO has a tripartite structure and mode of governance, and also that makes it a unique international organization in this respect to develop also this normative framework. And of course, the standards, which is the third point, is also an important element, because this tripartite approach is in particular very present in the development and the adoption and in the supervision of the international standards, which are the way through which the ILO has implemented its mandate to work on social security generally and on pensions in particular. Now, the body of standards, as Shara and Valeria also mentioned, is based on the principles that have been engraved in the standards in the wake of the Second World War. It started with the Declaration of Philadelphia, which extended the ILO's mandate to cover the entire society. Recommendations, key recommendations 67, 69, Convention 102, which synthesized their provisions into a conventional form. And then all the other subsequent standards that were adopted. Valerie mentioned Convention 128. We have the accompanying recommendation. We have more recently the Recommendation 202. All these standards have confirmed the continued relevance of these principles adopted in the second half of the 20th century. And in some cases, taking them even further, as in the case of recommendation 202 on the social protection floors. Now, ultimately, this means that when we look at ILO conventions and recommendations aimed at securing income security in old age, we always should remember that these parameters and principles that were referred to by Valerie, they result from the international consensus on this matter. And this is what makes ultimately the comparative advantage of these standards and why ILO is legitimate in considering them as the international social security law and international social security standards worldwide. So why having a tripartite roundtable on pensions today? Valerie mentioned the rationale. On my side, from my side, I have made four main reasons. The first one, of course, being that 32% of the persons in old age still do not receive any pension. And among those that receive pension, many persons do not receive pensions which do not allow them to live a life in dignity when they reach old age. So this is the first point. The second point was extensively touched upon by Shara, which relates to the challenges that we now face. She mentioned the demographic, economic, social transformations, digitalization, informality. I won't dig further into this because she really did an excellent job in describing these challenges. In addition, I may say that the crisis that we, as the one we are currently in, represent additional challenges, which of course will impact systems considerably, pension systems considerably. Now, the third point is of explaining why we decided it is a good time to have the pension roundtable today is because of the ongoing reforms, current ongoing reforms. Responding to these challenges that to the numerous challenges that we mentioned is currently on every country's agenda. And pension reforms currently are the biggest and most widespread feature of social security systems. Pensions need to be adapted through parametric changes to both demographic and economic and social realities, new ones, emerging ones. But also sometimes many countries adding new components to their pensions schemes, as Valeria explained, to make them more universal, with non-contributory pensions developing around the world, and which represent also another widespread form of reform in the area of pensions. And solutions are, of course, national to these challenges. However, in developing these solutions, and this is my fourth point, countries can count on the knowledge base and accumulated experience, which is condensed, so to say, in the body of internationally agreed social security standards, and they have been agreed and developed by governments, employers, and workers. Now, why are these principles contained in ILO social security standards considered key in securing the future of pensions? Well, to answer this question, we can first say, of course, that pensions are a sensitive and complex topic. Most pension systems are made of various components, supposed to meet a multiplicity of needs. Often we have contributory, non-contributory elements and mechanisms that coexist. Sometimes this leads to overlaps, sometimes this leads to gaps in protection. And the complexity and the sensitivity of this subject matter is such that reforms often lead to blockages or take sometimes decades before they can be finalized. Now, ILO standards on pensions therefore represent a useful reference base to tackle these difficulties. So concretely, how do they help? I wish to make, again here, four main points. Firstly, they help by recognizing that pension systems can be designed in different ways. As both Shara and Valerie said, they believe that there is no one-size-fits-all that can be decided internationally and then imposed to countries. On the contrary, these standards guarantee that countries can, and this is my second remark, have recourse to the optimal combination of protection mechanisms in each national situation, in taking into account the social, economic circumstances, the legal traditions, the history, to ensure that social security of the entire population is guaranteed. However, they are flexible enough, but this does not mean that anything goes. And so to achieve these objectives, the standards do so by reference to core principles for the administration and financing of pension schemes, and by reference, as Valerie said, to minimum benchmarks. So ILO standards on pensions establish these principles, minimum benchmark safeguards, so as to secure the sound governance and financing of pension systems, as well as adequate levels of protection guaranteeing life and dignity when people reach old age. The fourth point is that these standards also result from tripartite consensus. And the value of these principles is thus intangible, not only because they crystallize the best comparative experience that resulted in them being coming into being, but also because their very existence results from the point of equilibrium reached between the delicate point of equilibrium, as Shara mentioned, between the representative of governments, employers, and workers from around the world. So despite many past and future challenges for pension systems, what makes ILO pension principles unique is their is that their value has remained timeless, and they have proved their relevance and added value throughout history, both in times of plenty, but also in times of want and crisis, as the times we are going through now, and serve as a compass to navigate through crisis, because they are so intangible and timeless. Now, the internationally agreed principles, which are these principles, and why do we say that they are key in guiding the development of pension system and securing their sustainability? Now, for the purpose of our roundtable, the principles embodied in ILO social security standards related to pension have been regrouped in what you see now on the screen, so as to say in a principles temple. And these are the principles considered as the most relevant from a pensions perspective. Now, of course, as you can see from this picture, they're all of them are related. They are interdependent and mutually supportive, to use a synonym with ILO's strategic objectives. Now, from this picture, you realize very quickly that removing one of these principles and the temple will sooner or later collapse, as you will be lacking one of the structural components of what makes pension systems sustainable. Concretely, as you have seen from the questionnaire, the principles have been regrouped into 9 categories, as Valerie mentioned, and associated to a set of questions, and the questions are meant to illustrate how these principles are implemented in the national context by giving quantitative figures, sometimes analytical statements, and so on. The objective of this session, as Karuna mentioned, is to assist you in filling out the questions, respond to questions that you may have with respect to the questions themselves, and help you identify the type of needed information that needs to be completed and provided. So, without further ado, let us start by the first core principle, which is the principle most closely linked to giving effect to the human right to social security, because if we say it is a human right, we automatically say it should be also universal, and this is the principle of progressive realization of universal coverage. Now, the main objective of this principle is to examine where each of the participating countries stands from the point of view of progressively reaching universal coverage with respect to pensions, so as to guarantee that the human right to income security to all in old age is achieved, is implemented. Of course, universal protection is not a given, it's a moving target, and national policies and legal frameworks need to constantly adapt and pursue this objective so as to progressively ensure that all persons in their territories have access to one form or another of income security when they reach old age, both in law but also in practice. However, we know that there are multiple barriers. Sometimes the barriers are legal, sometimes they are administrative, sometimes they are financial. In many cases, they are practical in terms of accessing income security in old age. And these obstacles need to be continuously monitored in order for universal coverage to become and remain a reality for everyone concerned. Now, as pointed out in the questionnaire, universality can only be reached by way of combining various contributory and non-contributory mechanisms. It is through this combination of mechanisms that all segments of the population can ultimately be protected when they reach old age. Which takes us to the second principle that is dedicated to securing, after the universal coverage objective, the right to adequate and predictable pension benefits, principle number 2. So in order to reach their objectives, pension levels need to comply with adequacy criteria. It means provide protection that is sufficient to secure at least life in health and decency, and in the case of old age pensions, also that the protection lasts as long as the beneficiary lives. But how do you translate the principle of adequacy in practice? ILO standards foresee that, at the very least, each country should have its social protection floor, which guarantees at least basic income security in old age, by reference to national thresholds, determined by reference to the value of a minimum set of goods and services considered necessary to secure life in dignity. And this is the addition brought about by Recommendation 202. Importantly, compliance with the principle of adequacy is not a one-off exercise. It is closely linked to periodically reviewing the level of benefits in relation to the cost of living, the general level of earnings in the country, for example, and this we'll see because it is a dedicated principle number 9 that we'll examine at the end. In addition to the floor dimension, persons able to affiliate to existing social insurance mechanisms should be mandated by law to do so. Their pensions should represent, according to ILO standards, a predictable percentage of their reference earnings in order to allow them to maintain their standard of living in old age as much as possible. The level and the duration of the benefit should be defined by law, of course, and this is what makes the difference between having a right or benefiting from a charity. This is what ILO standards mean when they refer to the predictability of benefits. At the opposite end of the spectrum, if the level of pensions is unpredictable and volatile, for example, when it is left entirely dependent on the performance of financial markets, it will be difficult for the system to comply with the principle of predictability in cases where benefits are the main component. These benefits are the main component of the pension system. Another example is when the pension is paid as a lump sum instead of a periodical payment, you cannot guarantee income security until the death of the beneficiary. So protection in old age should be universal, principle number 1. Benefits need to be adequate and predictable, principle number 2. But how do we finance that? And this is what brings us to our third principle, which is the principle of social solidarity and collective financing. Now, ensuring universal income security in old age requires mobilizing powerful tools in terms of financing if we are to have a pension system that is sustainable and able to provide adequate protection levels. Now, ILO social security standards require that benefits need to be financed collectively. What do we mean by that? We mean that pensions, including pensions, need to be social security benefits, including pensions, need to be financed collectively by way of either contributions paid by employers and workers, by way of taxation, or a combination of these two mechanisms. And what do standards tell us more is that, and this takes a particular importance during times of crisis. Is that the financing of pensions should also be designed with social solidarity in mind and in a manner which avoids imposing hardship on persons of small means and takes into account the economic situation of the categories of persons protected. Concretely, this means that, for example, replacement ratios for pensions should be higher for lower wage earners in order to ensure life in health and decency to all beneficiaries, thanks to the redistributive role of social security. Social solidarity and solidarity in financing does imply also solidarity between economically active and non-active members of society, men and women, low and high wage earners, future and present generations, and so on. And so we can almost say that old age pensions are just the result of social solidarity, but at the same time, they are a means for boosting social cohesion through a redistribution towards the more vulnerable and members of society. So if I recap here, we have universal coverage, adequate benefits, sustainable financing, but who is in charge of organizing all that and making sure that it works out as planned? And this leads us to our fourth principle, that of the general responsibility of the state. Only the state indeed has the long-term vision, which is needed to ensure the proper administration and financing of pension systems, as well as the due provision of the benefits that are due. The overarching principle of the general responsibility of the state, and you see it, it represents the roof of our temple of principles. The general responsibility of the states has always been central in the development of international social security standards, and remains equally central today in a context of evolving circumstances and new challenges. And the current crisis has again stressed the central role of the state to guarantee the continuity of benefit provision and for returning the systems onto safer grounds while guaranteeing solidarity in the repayment of the benefits that have been accumulated through the crisis. Now, what do we mean when we say the state should assume the general responsibility for social security and pensions in particular? Firstly, the state should set the legal and administrative architecture for social security to be able to exist and operate. It can simply not disengage or relinquish this responsibility onto other players. Governments are thus considered by international social security standards as being in the driving seat when it comes to securing the solvency, the viability, and the sustainability of social security systems and pension schemes in particular. For example, if the state does not administer the pension system directly through dedicated public institutions, but has opted for delegating the task to other operators, such as mutual funds or private schemes, it ultimately remains responsible for ensuring that the system delivers on its objectives through proper regulation and enforcement. Concretely, governments have a duty of diligence and vigilance and need to monitor the financial sustainability of the pension scheme, of the pension system, by requiring periodic actuarial assessments to be carried out. If we look at it from a more helicopter view, a broader perspective, the responsibility of governments is double pursuant to ILO principles and standards. They are responsible for designing and implementing policies to achieve cohesion between the various components of the social protection system at both the normative and operational levels. But they are also responsible for ensuring coherence between the social protection policy and other economic and social policies based on an appropriate balance between various divergent interests, between public and private provision, between providing protection and fostering self-reliance, between resources and needs, and between seemingly conflicting interests. The state should also guarantee that the pension system is not discriminatory and has a gender lens and is responsive to special needs, which is our next principle. And principle number five related to non-discrimination, gender equality, and responsiveness to special needs. Now, what do we mean here? We refer, for example, to ensuring that persons with disabilities are not being discriminated by way indirectly or indirectly by way of the application of the pension rules and system. That when there are special needs, that these are being taken into account, that specific challenges of workers in the informal economy, migrant workers, persons living in remote rural areas, for example, or other groups are taken into account. And if you look at the questionnaire, a special emphasis has been made with respect to gathering information regarding the extent to which national pension systems are designed in a gender responsive manner and provide the measures which are aimed at taking into account gender considerations in relation to old age pensions, especially given the way in which women's greater care responsibilities impact on and shape their employment related capacity. So the state has the general responsibility to have in place a pension scheme which protects all of its population, provides adequate levels of protection, but it also needs to make sure that this system is sustainable in economic, fiscal, and financial terms, which is the next principle, principle six. Indeed, pension systems are in particular, pension system is in particular, because of their nature and purpose, require having a long-term vision. And such a vision is only possible if consideration is given to securing financial, fiscal, and economic sustainability. This includes, in particular, the need to ensure that the evolution of the costs and financing of social security systems are monitored constantly through periodic actuarial and financial studies, but also that on the basis of these studies, the parametric reforms that are required to guarantee their long-term sustainability are duly carried out. Now, this principle also requires ensuring the allocation of sufficient resources to achieve universal coverage, which may require consideration of the available fiscal resources and, if necessary, the option of mobilizing additional resources. Now, if fiscal consolidation measures are considered, the state should also make sure that these do not unduly undermine social security rights, including pension rights. Now, reflecting, being the reflection of a delicate balance between governments, employers, and workers' interests, ILO social security standards place the objective of financial, fiscal, and economic sustainability alongside that of social justice and equity. In other words, social and economic considerations must be seen as the two faces of the same coin in order to design systems which are accepted and secure the needed trust in the system and the willingness of all stakeholders to participate into them. It is for the state to strike this the right balance in each national context, including through transparency, rules, social dialogue, and these two things that I just mentioned, transparency and social dialogue, are going to be the before last two principles that we are going to examine. Let me start by saying a few words on the principle of transparency, which of course aims at ensuring overall systemic transparency, which is key to the successful design and efficient functioning of pension schemes. For example, we know that complex formulas, which make it virtually impossible for individuals to anticipate the level of their pensions, do not help the population neither in planning their retirement nor in trusting or having a positive image of the pension system. In this respect, objective and clear eligibility criteria, is as well as clear rules governing the determination of benefits, in particular the process of setting and reviewing benefit levels, these are the elements which result in better outcomes in terms of transparency and predictability, which in turn also generate greater public awareness, greater confidence, and more support for the system. Likewise, obscure governance rules or complete lack thereof, lack of, for example, independent monitoring and evaluation or discretionary, unmotivated decisions from the administration of pension schemes, are potential elements that are potentially highly prejudicial to pension schemes because they, of course, deter affiliation and risk compromising the sustainability of the scheme and public confidence into it. Transparency is therefore something that goes hand in hand with accountability. And if protected persons are unaware of government rules, and indeed are not able to observe the implementation of social protection schemes according to those rules, their ability to recognize violations and voice objections will also be constrained. So logically, the principle of transparency is closely related to that of social dialogue, which is the principle number 8. And effective participation indeed allows for greater transparency, accountability, sharing of information and knowledge, exchange of positions. It is also a prerequisite for ensuring good governance of social protection systems. Now, this principle refers to the effective involvement of the relevant stakeholders in all stages of the decision-making process about social security schemes from policy design to implementation, but also up to the monitoring of the implementation of policies. The principle also seeks to guarantee that representatives of protected persons and of employers either participate to the management of pension schemes or are consulted in connection with management and administration. And this is key element of the governance of social insurance schemes in particular, taking into account that workers and employers finance these schemes, of course, and therefore need to have a say in determining how the schemes operate. I could only add, also add that often truly participatory management implies involving beyond the sphere of social partners, also broader circles, social circles made of representatives of sometimes specific groups, such as persons in vulnerability, but also in the case of pensions of retired persons, for example. And the final comment on the principle number 9, the last principle, is to say that the list of pensions-related principles would not be complete without mentioning the need for periodic revision of pensions. The aim here is of course to avoid an erosion of the value of pensions in payment over time, as it is of no use to have rules for calculating adequate pensions if these pensions lose their purchasing power within a few years. And here international social security standards adopted within the ILO therefore recognize that the level of pensions needs to be periodically reviewed and adjusted in order to take into consideration the evolutions that have taken place over time in the level of earnings and the cost of living. Without such periodical requirement being prescribed by law, the pensions would ultimately fail to guarantee the income security in old age, which is their ultimate objective. The periodic adjustment should preferably be automatic and based in the national legislation, as in the case of indexation that Valérie referred to, but can also be achieved by way of ad hoc government interventions. It should, of course, be informed according to ILO standards by actuarial valuations. The questions under this part of the questionnaire aim at gathering information on what mechanisms are used in your countries to periodically review the level of pensions and see how in your national circumstances over the last 10 years the level of pensions has been preserved vis-a-vis the cost of living and the level of earnings. And with that, we have covered the 9 key principles around which the questionnaire has been structured. I want to thank you for listening to this long presentation and look forward to receiving your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Krum, for this very detailed explanation of the principles contained in ILO standards that should underpin pension systems and which are part of the questionnaire that you will be filling out and returning back to us. So given that, now I would like to open the floor for your comments and your questions. Please raise your hand in the chat box or indicate in the chat box if you wish to take the floor. Or if you have your cameras on and you want to raise your hand, please do so. So over to you. So for the moment, I don't see any hands raised in the chat box or any comments in the chat box. So please do take the floor. Over to you. Would anybody like
to... Can I speak?
Yes, please, Mr. Silabas.
Yes.
Please go ahead, Mr. Silaban.
First of all, thank you for to the speaker and also for the meeting we have today. In my country, there is... They make different about old age system and pension system. So there are two separate schemes. All aid system already like more than 25 years, but the pension scheme just started 5 years ago. So that's also my problem when we talk here, whether I refer to both when I will be a panelist next month, when we talk about the corporates, the adequacy, and also the power of the scheme, whether I have to refer to all aid scheme or I refer both with the pension scheme, because we have different and do have data differently and then different arrangement. So that's first question. And then the second question is about the, I don't remember where is dispute, but in the ILO document said that rate replacement rate of the salary must be 40% during the pension time. If they continuously contribute like 30 years, something will be impossible to do that now in the private workers' stories, because a lot of people now going to precarious work, industrial revolution 4.0 make it on off the participation. So also any information about, so what you should be, what you have to be done to overcome the situation when impossibility to have continuously working 30 years. So, and then that's the problem. If you continue to follow ILO policy or ILO recommendation, 40% replacement rate of the salary means we have to increase the dues rate every month, which that impossible to do now, because so many structural reform in the economic to reduce labor cost. So please guide me, because now we are also ongoing a process to strengthening our social security pension, social security in the whole in the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Silaban. Before answering the question, I'd just like to, I noticed that our colleague from the IOE, Mr. Luis Morales, would like to ask a question. So please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. We really appreciate all the explanations around the round table and the relevant information for our preparation. I have a question on the format, and thanks, Shahar, for explaining how we will be working in such a reduced time. You clearly explain the allocation that we will have during the week, but there's a slot by the end of the week for conclusions. If I remember, it's 25 minutes that we will have. But what was not clear to me is, how do you envisage these 25 minutes to be used by the participants? Is it just one spokesperson who's going to make use of those minutes? Can we freely allocate those? How are you envisaging the closing of this round table? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Morales. Are there any other questions before we start answering the questions? I don't see any hands raised here. I don't see any requests for the floor. Before I give the floor to Kroom to answer the question that Mr. Silaban, you had you had asked. I also wanted to acknowledge that we received the questionnaire that you had filled in, so thank you very much for that. So over to you, Kroom, for responding to Mr. Siliban. Thank you.
Thank you, Karuna, and thank you, Mr. Siliban, for your questions. You had two questions. The first one related to which schemes should you be taking into account for the purpose of responding to the questionnaire. And here, our ambition and our objective was to have as complete as possible picture of the situation in your country. And therefore, we have asked in the questionnaire to cover all the population that is of pensionable age, all the what kind of mechanisms exist in the country aimed at covering population groups beyond a certain age when they reach old age and are not able to work anymore. So I would say not only the contributory mechanisms, but also the non-contributory that exist to protect persons in old age. The second question related to what should be the replacement rate. And you referred in your question to the replacement rate that is established by the Social Security Minimum Standard, Convention number 102, adopted in 1952, of 40% after 30 years. I wish to say this standard being the minimum level of protection provides for alternatives of which the 40% after 30 years is only one option. Basically, in order for a system to comply with this, when the convention has been ratified, they may go for selecting this option or another option made of, for example, the existence of a minimum pension in the country, which is at another level, and so on. But in ILO's assistance technical assistance in the area of developing pension schemes within its member states, can actually help countries design pension schemes that are in line with these requirements by studying the various options. You referred to raising the contribution rate, but there are many other options through which these levels can be maintained, achieved, or secured and kept throughout the years. So I wish to say very happy to continue this discussion on how to assist you in your reflection in terms of securing this minimum of 40% after 30 years, which is indeed presented as the core ILO or perceived as being the core ILO objective when it comes to pensions as the minimum. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kroom. So now may I hand it over to Shara for the response to Mr. Morales?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Morales. I think in terms of the format, as you saw from the agenda, as for the last day, our expectation is that each group, governments, workers, employers, will be allocated 25 minutes to present their main takeaways. Now, who actually presents? I would assume that for each group, you will have your own chosen representative, elected representative, and that's how it's going to be done. And then there's going to be 30 minutes that will be really more free-flowing conversation from the floor, reactions and discussion. So that's how it's being sort of planned. I don't know if your clarification was with respect to how much time each group is going to get. So it's 25 minutes per group. That means a total of 75 minutes, 1 hour, 15 minutes for the presentations, and then 30 minutes for group discussion, questions and answers from the floor. That's how it's being planned. Would you like any further clarification, or is that sufficient?
Thank you, Shara. I was thinking about the idea of splitting those 25 minutes freely among our group if needed to tackle, for example, comments from the four regions or so. We don't know how the players group will organize, but I just wanted to make sure that we can freely make use of those of that time. Also considering that there are some countries that have appointed two experts for the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 25 minutes that you have, it's up to the group how you want to do the presentation. So I think, you have a free hand there in terms of whether you want to have different colleagues present or whether you want to have one spokesperson. So it's really your time, and I think it depends how the group decides to do it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And just on the topic of the spokespersons, if I may just add also mention that at the very beginning of the roundtable meeting, that is to say on the Monday, there will be a one-hour group meeting before actually we go into the roundtable. And at that point in time, it is assumed that each of the groups will nominate their spokesperson. And during the opening session, which is a 30-minute session on the first day, actually the spokespersons will just be elected for this roundtable. So that's a little bit of an overview for how we assume that the spokespersons will be elected, and then further on, it's up to each group, as Shara mentioned, how you want to divide your time on the last day for the takeaway messages. So,
may I ask a follow-up question to that, Karuna?
Sure, please, Evelyn.
With regard to the group meeting on the Monday, as well as on the Thursday, because there are no meetings planned, but it's a day that's set aside for all groups to also reconvene in advance of the last day, where sort of conclusions, takeaways will be discussed. I was wondering, are you intending to provide interpretation for the groups to allow them to facilitate their meetings?
So yes, on the Monday, the first hour is dedicated for group meetings, and we will provide interpretation. We would like to know from the groups which languages they would like, amongst the of course the official languages, and then there is another group meeting which is scheduled, and that is on the Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's a shorter meeting. It's a half an hour meeting, but again, we will provide interpretation in the languages that each of the group requires. On the Thursday, given that there is no meeting, we are not scheduling any interpretation or any meetings at all, whether it's group or plenary meetings.
Is there flexibility for the timing of the group meeting on the Wednesday? Meaning, can it only be half an hour, or could it be an hour? Because I think after such rich discussions, it might be helpful for the groups to at least have the assurance of interpretation for a full hour in case the half an hour is not sufficient.
Yes, we can look into that. So definitely, if a group would like that, please don't hesitate to let me know and to let us know, and we will look into organizing that for you.
I think it would be helpful for us, because I think half an hour, will, especially if we don't start exactly on time, will be very condensed.
I fully agree, yes. Of course. So we look forward to hearing back from the groups in case you need it. And that's the same for the employers group, please. So, okay. Are there any other questions?
Karuna, I have a question. I see in the agenda you have PM, 13 hours GMT. That is 8 p.m. or even 9 p.m. in Beijing. So is that a mistake, or is it the correct time?
No, Luis. So the fact was that when we were organizing the Pensions Roundtable meeting, given that we have participants from all different time zones, we had to try to accommodate the most convenient time zone for all participants. And unfortunately, sometimes for some of them on the two ends, it might be either very, very early in the morning or late in the evening. And we ask for your indulgence because it was very difficult to otherwise organize it at a time, at any other time. This way, at 12 GMT, means quite early in Mexico, which is about, if I'm not mistaken, 6 in the morning in Mexico. So we could not do it any earlier than that. And we realized that for Asia it is late, but again, we had to find this balance. So, and we will, what we will do is we will make sure that when we are taking the country cases, that when we are looking at them, that we go through them in the, for example, Asia will be, of course, the first ones to be presenting, so that they are early on in the schedule, and not late in the at night at the end of the roundtable agenda. So, but I'm, you know, we're very sorry for this, but unfortunately, with these virtual meetings and having participants from different time zones, it really makes it very, very complicated to get a good hour for everybody. But we try to make it as flexible. And that's why also for these pension roundtable meetings, the preparatory meetings, we have been organizing them by region so that we get it at the right time for everybody. So if any of my colleagues would like to add anything, please do go ahead.
Yeah. Also, what we had discussed, I think, Karuna, is that we will record the whole session so that in case you miss, like, the last 30 minutes, you can still watch it the next day.
For the pensions roundtable from the 30th of November to 4th of December, yes, we will be recording them and making them available. We will have a website which will be set up, and I will be communicating this information next week. And this information, all of this will be uploaded on the website, which will be available only to the participants of the roundtable. Also currently what we are thinking of is all the questionnaires that will be coming in. We will be uploading them onto the site so that participants of the roundtable can have access to them, as well as the two-page narrative text that each one will be sending in. So any other colleagues who may wish to add something to it? Okay. Are there any other questions? I hope that we. Yes, I do see Madame Peng. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have a. I'm sorry. Should I close this?
You're fine. We can hear you very well. Thank you.
Okay. So my question is about the orders of the presentation, the countries. So I didn't see which country goes first. You mentioned about the Asia countries will go first, right? Or did I miss it? Or I don't know about the which country will go first and then second, or the orders of the presentation of countries.
Okay, maybe Karuna, you want me to take that quickly?
Perfect, yes.
Yeah. Thank you for asking that question. We have not drafted the agenda yet, but we were discussing and are idea was to do exactly as you're saying, because of the time difference, to start with the Asian countries so that they can be at least not too late for them to when they have to make their presentations. So that's one consideration we were having, and to put the countries from the Americas last, given the time difference for them. So that's one of the ideas that we have in terms of how to order the presentations.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and you will get the draft agenda, we hope, within the next few weeks. But maybe just to emphasize maybe a couple of deadlines that you have upcoming. So for the completed questionnaires, for those who have not yet completed it, it is 1st of November. It was 15th of October, but it was extended to 1st of November to allow this preparatory meeting to happen before the deadline. So hopefully you have gained a bit more sort of insight into the questionnaire from the presentations today, which will enable you to complete and submit the questionnaire by 1st of November. And then the two pagers that each of you will be doing, summarizing in a synthetic way the key issues from your description of the pension systems and pension reforms, in whether they are in line or not with the ILO principles. Those two pages are due on 23rd of November. So, and it's really important that we get them on the 23rd of November so that we have time to translate them into the three languages and share them with everyone so that that knowledge can be made widely available. And we have a template that we have prepared, a very simple template for the two pagers that we will share with you after this meeting to help you with structuring of the two pages. So I think that's all I wanted to say at this point, apart from thanking all of you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Shara. I have added to the chat the two deadlines that Shara has mentioned so that you have them also in writing. And as I also indicated, we will be setting up the web page for you, and we will put all these templates, etc., also on the website. But we will be sending them to you also by email in the next week. Is there any other question that you, any other colleagues have any other questions? I don't see anything. And once again, thank you for also extending, taking the extra 10 minutes for this meeting. So I don't see any other questions right now. So in the meantime, so I would like to thank, as Shara said also, we'd like to thank you very much for having participated.
One request?
Sorry? Okay, Mr. Silaban, please go ahead.
Just a minute. I don't know if this is proper to ask, but I need the kind of the certification or acknowledge either as a participant or resource person, a kind of the certificate from the ILO for this meeting, because sometimes that can be used to increase my competency in social security in Indonesia. Just small request, if possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Silaban. So that means just a confirmation that you attended the meeting. We'll send it to you. Perfect. Okay.
Because I am also a resource person in the panelists.
Yes.
So not only participant. Thank you. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. We'll do that. So having said that, if there are no other questions or comments, I would like to then also thank you very much for having participated in this preparatory meeting. And please do not hesitate to contact us by email if you need any other information. We will be, in any case, in contact with you over the next few days and weeks until the roundtable. And we look forward also to your participation at the roundtable from the 30th of November to the 4th of December. So thanking you once again, and have a very nice evening for you in Asia, and a good afternoon for our colleagues in the Arab states and in Geneva. Bye-bye, and thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you.
Have a nice day.